Welcome back to the Daily Edition with Matt Gurney.
Good morning. Thanks for joining me on the show. Nice to have you here. Great to welcome our next guest to the show, someone who I spoke with a lot during the pandemic as we tried to weave our way through that tremendously fun time. Anthony Dale is here, President and CEO of the Ontario Hospital Association, who has been writing recently about the state of healthcare in Ontario. And Anthony, it's wonderful again to talk with you again. It's been too long, so great to have you on the show. Thanksgiving, just this past weekend, and I have some people in my family or extended family or at least in-laws who work in different capacities in the healthcare system. And just chat around the table, man, just kind of hearing their experiences. And I always make a point of not getting into specifics about things that are said around the family Thanksgiving table. It just seems like kind of like a super version of the rule, happy wife, happy life. Like, don't blow what the in-laws said on the air. But certainly I think I can say, and I don't think anyone would begrudge me this, the situation in the healthcare system, Anthony, can I describe it as serious?
Oh, it's definitely serious. There are some green shoots, I have to say, but overall, we're facing a situation that will continue to compound on itself in the years ahead unless we start taking some pretty dramatic action. So the green shoots and the positive side include things like the first ever expansion in hospital beds, really, for decades here in Ontario. Going into the pandemic, we had about 30,000 beds overall. We now have about 33,000, 34,000 staffed in an operation today, and the total headcount of people working in hospitals is up by about 35,000 people. But the reality is we're treading water because the population of Ontario grew by 1.5 million people over that five-year period. So it's very frustrating because these are much needed investments, but you know, the system is continuing to struggle with long wait times and making sure that people get access to care in a timely fashion. And across, of course, the rest of what we call the health services continuum, so the other kinds of services outside of hospital, we continue to see quite significant capacity challenges, particularly in long-term care and home care and other places where hospitals really rely on being able to access them for the patients for discharge to another more appropriate setting. We're still sitting in both acute and post-acute care beds at over 6,000 alternate level of care patients. And I know, Matt, you know that who those patients are very well. They tend to be frail elderly people, and they finish their time in hospital, but we can't discharge them to another more appropriate setting because we just don't have the capacity yet. And those numbers are remaining stubbornly high and a sign of a system that is really not in balance. And then if I could just add, earlier today, with in partnership with the University of Toronto, the Dalhousie School of Public Health, we jointly released a study that looks at the burden of disease in Ontario over the next 15 years or so. So it takes 2020 as a starting point and looks out into the future, studying 18 of the most significant kinds of diseases and conditions that make people sick and require ultimately potentially hospitalization. And we are facing a huge wave of disease over the next 15 years, and there is simply no way that over the long run hospitals will be able to cope. So what the study reinforces is the urgent need to focus on prevention and dealing with the reasons why people get sick in the first place, and also creating new strategies and programs to deal with what's called chronic disease management. People will be living with disease for much longer periods of time, and there'll be far more hundreds of thousands more people living with these conditions into the future. And we really need to make sure our health system is properly prepared, both from a system design and a capacity point of view, for this pretty remarkable challenge.
Not trying to be a downer here. You know me, Mr. Optimism. But when we talk about the challenge in recent years, I've been fascinated to watch it, and Lord knows you and I have spoken about this. the mm-hmm. amount of resources we've been throwing at the healthcare system is genuinely remarkable. And I know people always say it's not enough, or Doug Ford spent $13 on this instead of healthcare, mm-hmm. and therefore mm-hmm. he's bad. But in just in objective terms, and I make a lot of friends when I point this out to people, but I was having a debate recently with someone who said that the healthcare system was being starved of resources by a government with a privatization agenda. And I said, look, I don't know what Doug Ford's agenda is. And I wouldn't be shocked if he was ideologically predisposed to liking the idea of privatization. But if you look at just the amount of money that has been flowing into healthcare mm-hmm. in Canada, but also specifically in Ontario, because that's what the debate was about, you cannot in good faith tell me that this is a system that has been starved. You might be able to tell me it's been underfunded. I understand mm-hmm. that's a moving target. Funding depends on needs and all resource allocation, all that stuff. But the argument that we are starving the system simply does not stand up to scrutiny. We are spending enormous yeah. money on the healthcare system. The question, as always, is whether or not it's enough.
So you're absolutely right. And, you know, Ontario's hospitals don't shy away from this debate, that's for sure. The taxpayers invest a tremendous amount of money into hospital services, and they deserve to know that their system is working as efficiently and effectively as it possibly can. On one side of what you said, I can tell you that we spend the least amount per capita in Canada here in Ontario on hospital services, and we're actually proud of that fact because it creates an efficiency dividend of well over $3 billion that can be reinvested in other kinds of health and social services and other public priorities. The reality is, though, in our system here in Canada, we chose to create public hospitals and create public health insurance in the way in which we did in the middle of the 20th century. The workforce in hospitals is very, very large. It's 265,000 people. And the bulk of the cost of delivering healthcare goes into wages, benefits, and pension. And the healthcare workers deserve every single penny that they receive for their very important and very hard work. So the issue for me is, how do we focus upstream, reduce reliance on hospitals, focusing on, for example, primary care and family medicine? How do we strengthen that part of the healthcare system where we know if we can keep people from ever needing to be hospitalized in the first place, not only will they have a better quality of life and better health outcomes, but the healthcare system will incur the expense of a very, very expensive acute care admission. Looking at the determinants of health and learning from the lessons of the pandemic about why people might get sick in the first place, and designing services and systems around keeping people well. One of the biggest kind of insights from the burden of disease study that the University of Toronto just completed with us is that younger people are an increasingly significant component of the cohort of people suffering from chronic conditions, and obesity looks like it may be a major factor in that trend. That's something that we have the tools to address over the long run as a society. But you can see, Matt, like so much of this involves looking at the situation and the challenge over the long run. And I have to tell you that the OHA has been calling for capacity planning for the healthcare system in this province for more than 15 years. We've had under the Wynne government, there was an explicit commitment in the 2015 budget to introduce long-term health services capacity planning, and nothing happened. More recently, there's been some work that's been underway, but again, we don't yet know its outcome. We don't yet know what the trajectory is going to be. And our system is kind of structurally hardwired in a way to push against the need for long-term planning simply because of the critical importance of the annual budget and planning cycle within the government of Ontario and the government of Canada. So there are systemic reasons why the system hasn't been able to focus on the long run. But what we're seeing with the release of our study today is it's really now or never. We have to make some very urgent shifts in what we think is important when it comes to our healthcare system. Hospitals are important, but we really need to move into prevention and dealing with the determinants of health and strengthening the whole continuum as soon as we possibly can.
One of the concerns I have, and saying I have one concern is perhaps somewhat generous, but a concern that I have is that you had said a few minutes ago that we need to get better at not having our health care delivered primarily in a hospital setting, right, where we need to get better. You mentioned family care, and I would add to that we need to get better at long-term care, at rehab care.
Totally.
We need to get better at community care and mental health care and all these things. The concern I have, and this is, again, as a guy, I write about this as a journalist, but I also experience this as a citizen. We're moving in the opposite direction, and I am lucky to have a family doctor. But about a year ago, I broke my foot. It was just a small, minor household accident. And I had a family doctor. That part of the system worked for me. He was trying to refer me into the rest of the system, and the system wasn't there. In a pretty stark, eye-opening way, I was dealing with, again, I'm a native English speaker, upper middle class, high social capital individual in the largest city in a G7 country, and I was struggling to navigate what was left of our healthcare system. It had a lot of gaps in it.
You're absolutely right, and I'm very sorry to hear that has happened, and I know there are many stories like that all across our province. I even have my own family members who have had some of the same challenges, which is why I can't underscore enough the importance of realizing what is not just ahead of us, but what is already on us, and taking very swift and decisive action to begin to remedy it. Because I have concerns about people's ongoing confidence in this public healthcare system. I think that Ontario's hospitals serve the province with huge distinction and courage and dedication through the COVID civil emergency and pandemic. And there are certainly, you know, huge disruptions to the system as a consequence of that once in a 100-year crisis. We are seeing some signs of stabilization now. The vacancy in hospitals has absolutely improved and stabilized over what it was in the first kind of year to year and a half after the pandemic. A lot of what that disruption is revealing is a system that's been under quite significant strain for many, many years, as we chose as a province, in the case of hospitals, to flatline the number of hospital beds from the years 1995 to 2019. We had, over those more than two decades, we had a total bed count of about 30,000, but the population of the province increased by several million people over that time frame. We were able to do that, meet that remarkable challenge in part through the benefit of technological innovation like minimally invasive surgery. And a big part of how we'll be able to address the challenges of today and tomorrow in our healthcare system is by consciously planning for and relying on the introduction of technological innovation and other forms of innovation into the system. So we know we can, there are going to be real limits to growth, Matt, in the next 10 to 15 years. We know that as the population gets a lot older and requires more healthcare and social services, the size of the workforce that is paying the tax, that are paying the taxes and are available to work to support those services and those needs will be much smaller in relative terms. So we won't be able to hire our way out of this the way people might think is possible. We already have 1 in 10 people in the workforce in Ontario today already work in healthcare in both the public and private system. So technology, you know, starting with artificial intelligence at the patient bedside, at the organizational level, and even at the system level, should be able to yield improvement. But again, we have to act and act very, very quickly.
Give me, I'm taking a look at the clock here. We got about 4 minutes left here. Give me your sense of what we can do quickly that might begin to bend this trajectory. What do you talk about the things we need to get right? What are those things?
Well, like a lot of industries, we think artificial intelligence already shows tremendous promise. We have some fantastic research hospitals and research partners here in Ontario working feverishly to explore and innovate and apply artificial intelligence in healthcare settings. And whether you look at Unity Health or many of the community hospitals across Ontario, we're already seeing great results. So, for example, at Unity Health, they have a special AI-based program that is set up in emergency departments, essentially monitoring patients who are expected or are believed to be at risk of stroke. And the system is working as an extender of the clinical staff there, and it's proving to be able to dramatically improve outcomes and predictability. That is to say, it can identify people at greater risk of stroke better than a human can on his or her own, and that is improving immediately the outcomes. So people's lives are being saved, they're able to access care more quickly and expeditiously, prioritized, and so on. So that's a great example in the real world of something that is already in place and needs to be spread and scaled in the province for quick and immediate benefit of the patient that the system exists to serve. You know, I hope in the next ongoing rounds of negotiations between the Ontario Medical Association and the Ministry of Health and Long-Term Care that there will be some innovative conversations about how we can introduce AI-based technologies and other forms of technological innovation in primary care settings for home monitoring, for example, to bolster the fantastic family medicine practitioners out there in the province doing their very best and add that extra capacity and system capability. And over the long run, you know, things like genomics and personalized medicine, if we apply ourselves effectively and see the potential, we can reach a point where we're customizing care for each and every patient in the province. But you can tell by the kind of bold and innovative way we're talking here, this is going to require a revolutionary mindset when it comes to how we make decisions about resources and how we get things done.
How much of this is just going to be driven, honestly, in the end? I mean, we've only got a minute left. I would love to think that we're going to handle this with forthright, mature political leadership. But I have seen these guys in action before, and I'm not even saying this in a partisan way because I think this applies broadly for all of them. I don't think we're going to do it in a mature, calm, collected, disciplined way. I think we're going to end up probably ad hoc-ing something, kind of MacGyvering it, in a way that kind of works on the fly as things begin to fall apart around us here. And I think what's going to continue to happen is some of what we're already seeing, and I can confirm this just through direct personal experience. People who have the means are going to go find healthcare elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can tell you that the leadership of Ontario's hospitals knows what's at stake here. We've spent the period after the pandemic doing some real soul searching and trying to understand why the system can't or won't change after a remarkable experience like a three-year civil emergency and public health crisis, the likes of which we experienced. A lot of the lessons from that time about decentralization, creating quick incentives, allowing rapid decision-making, moving quickly, we've almost forgotten them as a society and as a system. We think that hospitals have an obligation to lead all across the province in boardrooms and in meeting rooms and with clinical leadership. Hospitals are making plans to grapple with the very challenge that we've just spent the last 15 minutes describing, because we think the responsibility of leadership goes well beyond government. There are real limits to what government can and do and influence. In our health system today, that's the reality. It is highly centralized. It is also highly bureaucratized. And that's been built up over years, but government can be a force for good and a partner for change. There's no doubt about it. So our interest is in creating a groundswell of support to mobilize for the very change that that we need. So that, we feel, is the duty of Ontario's hospitals and the OHA.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on, and I know our conversation today is part of your efforts to do that very thing. I wish you every success as you do it. A pleasure, Anthony. Great to talk with you again. It's nice being able to talk when we're not in the midst of a wrenching once-in-a-century public catastrophe. So I will say I'm fascinated. I encourage everybody to check out the OHA's new report on how to use technology in the healthcare system. And my friend, I will wish you a happy belated Thanksgiving. I hope you had a great long weekend.
I did, and my very best to you and your family, Matt. Thanks so much for what you're doing.
Thank you. Anthony Dale, for your president and CEO of the Ontario Hospital Association.